My focus is primarily the UK, and I like to try and combine trans theory with analytic feminist epistemology in addressing discourses of trans inclusion, both in terms of practices that we might recognise in day-to-day interactions like pronoun use, but also in more perhaps hard-hitting policy examples. But today, first, I'll be introducing some trans terminology so that we all come in with a broad understanding of the background. Then I will explore a few examples of pronoun disclosure practices, focusing particularly on, and perhaps topically, given the context, on philosophy conferences, and particularly things like stickers and name badges, and how these have been mobilised by trans activists, but also perhaps how they might have been uncritically deployed. So theorising a few issues that I diagnose here. And in the third section, I will introduce something more in-depth theoretical approach. Particularly I'll be looking at McKinney's approach of theorising epistemic injustice, particularly extracted speech, taking ideas roughly from Foucault's False Confessions and applying them in contemporary contexts. And then finally, in the fourth section, I would appreciate, if possible, a somewhat interactive section where we try and think about what we might do with these practices in the future. There are certain positive aspects that I would like to keep and maintain, and there are others that I think are quite troubling that deserve alternative methods. So with that in mind, this graph is, or table, is a very large set of conjugated English language singular pronouns, which is a bit of a mouthful, but basically you'll be very familiar, I assume, with the first two, that is she and he. So these are pronouns that cisgender people would be expected to use. So I take cisgender here to be people whose gender identities matches those that they were assigned at birth. We understand roughly how these function. If somebody's a woman, you're probably referring to her as she. They're also likely to be used by transgender people. I take transgender as a broad umbrella to refer to people whose gender identities do not match those that they were assigned at birth. And so, for example, if we were to consider how one might address a trans man, it would likely be with the pronouns he, him. And to go further with that, if you were to refer to the trans man as she, this would be a practice of misgendering. That is, you've gotten the pronoun wrong, and I'm going to take as given that cases of misgendering are harmful. There's a very good paper by Dembroff and Woodock that explains exactly how these harms function. Today that will not be my focus. I'll be looking more at the practices and how we might ethically complicate them, and less on exactly what sort of harm these misgenderings constitute. But you'll know that most of the table is taken up by gender-neutral pronouns. You'll probably be most familiar here with the singular they. It's a basic basic part of everyday English language use. Perhaps if you don't know somebody's gender, you'll refer to them as they, so they walk through the door, etc. But particularly and increasingly, they are pronouns used by non-binary trans people. I take this to be under a broader umbrella of trans, hence the asterisks, which perhaps I could discuss in the question portion. So with these in mind, I would like to introduce you to a practice that perhaps some people will be familiar, perhaps not. This is a sticker, you can really buy this, and it's the kind of thing that you see increasingly. I've seen it in activist circles, I've seen it in job interview settings, and I've seen it at academic conferences, where you'll be invited to write your name, and underneath you'll be invited to write your pronouns. A quick note here on terminology: preferred pronouns is what the sticker has stipulated. I would reject preferred pronoun, and I think there's been a move away from it, which I wholly endorse, in that misgendering is not optional. Preferred pronouns somewhat neglects this. But insofar as this relates to academic conferences here, and academia more generally, here is, I think, quite a good example of the many ways in which we might expect pronouns to be relevant in our day-to-day interactions with students as educators. I'll return to this example a few times at the end, and perhaps we can consider which ones are valuable and which ones we might want to quibble later. But for now, and just to focus our discussion, I'll be using the example of a recent APA meeting, that is the American Philosophical Association, and the statement that they issued of their own practice. So here we have the pronoun stickers that I showed you. They're available right from the start of the conference, and everybody is encouraged to wear them. That includes cisgender people, that includes trans people, that includes non-binary people. And they're very clearly situated as a show of solidarity, again, which I endorse. So picture this as we move into our discussions. Okay, here's the positive intervention that I see these stickers making. And really they come into two categories, so I've divided them into three here. The first is that it helps address non-binary invisibility. Non-binary invisibility is something, as I see, as being a distinctly non-binary concern, which is where I think I draw a distinction in mainstream trans theory towards more uniquely non-binary trans perspectives in approaching these practices. And secondly, insofar as they promote a trans-inclusive ideology, that is, they help counter trans-exclusionary ideologies and rhetorics, that they suggest that the conference, etc., will be a welcoming environment, which is a definite positive move. And they remove, I think, in a very formal structural way, through the literal visibility, the extra labour performed by non-binary people to prevent their own misgendering. So I think there's serious value in that. So more non-binary invisibility, because that's really where I see the crux of the distinction being made. And also the crux of the problem. For background here, I'm mostly a gender theorist, so I'll try not to get too distracted by terminology. But broadly, when I say visibility here, I'm not merely referring to recognition. So, for example, there are many times in which this practice might be used where non-binary people are not the intended users. So we might imagine cases where somebody presents, a trans person presents as gender non-conforming, and that's a welcoming space for a trans man, a trans woman. Likewise, there may be many instances where there are no non-binary attendees, so everybody would be wearing she or he pronoun badges. That's entirely acceptable, and indeed I would argue quite valuable in and of itself, insofar as it destabilizes assumptions that you can tell what somebody's gender is just by looking at them. But I'm rather talking about visibility in a more theoretical sense. That is, if we go to Butler, we understand that gender is largely constituted by how others perceive us. I mean a weak form of constitution here. That is, it is expected that you will conform either to man and woman, and you are interpolated into these categories, and that process happens through the social imaginary regardless of your gender identity and presentation. This is a problem that reoccurs for non-binary people who have to perform quite strenuous epistemic labour to counter this, that is explaining to people that no, they're not a man, no, they're not a woman, and no, they do not want to use she or he pronouns. I see this as being a distinct trouble to transgender forms of misgendering, which I think are often far more willful. That is, I see this as being fundamentally a problem of hermeneutical injustice, that is a lack of understanding, and that this manifests in a form of epistemic injustice that is perhaps less morally blameworthy, but no less harmful for the non-binary individual. And I'll be referring to this as bigenderism. Okay. So when the stickers are visible on the chest, and they say they, them pronouns, it provides an opportunity for the non-binary person to automatically counter these assumptions. It is a very literal and visible rejection of these processes of interpolation, and I see this as being a very positive move. And likewise, as I suggested, it presents an act of solidarity within the conference, which suggests that you will not be laughed out of a room. It suggests that the non-binary trans people can go to the organisers if they experience consistent and willful misgendering. It suggests that the conference is committed to the principles of diversity and equality, perhaps across the board, perhaps not. And likewise, I see it as being a really very interesting intervention to have a sticker, something very cheap, something very replaceable, performing quite serious labour. That is, the non-binary person does not have to experience misgendering and then act retroactively, the harm has already been done. Rather, it preempts such practices and protects them from these harms. So invisibility is addressed and solidarity is expressed through these stickers. But I want to trouble the practice as well, because I see through this visibility quite an obvious harm. It functions very well for transgender inclusion more broadly, but where a non-binary agent needs to navigate these systems, there is quite a serious risk of increasing non-binary vulnerability. That is, by being visible, the non-binary agent is more open to willful rejection of their identity, willful denial of their identities, which I take to be a more pernicious form of harm and more pernicious form of epistemic injustice. I have here what I diagnose to be the mechanism by which the stickers function to out non-binary people or to commit harm against them. So on the one hand, presented with a sticker, the non-binary person can, say, use a gender-neutral pronoun. Upon doing so, when seen by others, it is very plausible that they'll be outing themselves as non-binary. If you're presented with perhaps an unexpected pronoun, that's a mark of literal othering on your chest. And we can, a mark of othering, a mark of attack, potential attack. And likewise, if the non-binary person chooses to avoid this process of outing, what they are doing instead is perhaps using gender pronouns, a mark that they have to be complicit in their own erasure in order to be less vulnerable to harm. In neither of these scenarios is the non-binary agent's wishes respected, and nor are they protected. I think this maps quite nicely into contemporary discussions in analytic feminist epistemology. This is an extract from McKinney, who's drawing on discussions perhaps from Fricker, from Dotson, from Medina. And I'll read it out to see if I can make it make sense to you. So, it's arguing that there is a certain form of epistemic injustice done in some conversations, we might say. So, the eliciting of utterance U from subject S in context C itself constitutes an epistemic injustice against said subject, where the subject's communicative agency is significantly and wrongly undermined, bypassed, or overridden by the process of eliciting said utterance, and the process of eliciting the utterance is part of a pattern of similar practices of unfair, targeted, persistent, and systematic control. So I relate portion one to the outing or erasing complicity of the previous slide. Now I relate part two, as it were, to the bi-gender system of control and categorization. Broadly speaking, I want to make these interventions insofar as they have real-world impacts in how we as students and educators might consider alternatives. And I also want to highlight the following passage, insofar as I think it troubles the perfect picture of stickers to begin with. So you might have, some of you might have picked up on perhaps there being a third way out of this. So either you out yourself as non-binary, or you try and pass as cisgender, or perhaps you just write nothing, right, on the badge. You leave that pronoun section empty. I'm going to suggest that that isn't an option. This is a blog post linking back to that APA meeting that I mentioned earlier. So despite the fact that pronoun stickers were available to all and they were available from registration, there was no shortage of these stickers, many people did not participate in the practice, particularly a large number of cisgender men in attendance did not participate. And I take this to mean that where there is no pronoun listed, it is assumed that you are cisgender. So in other words, no speech is also complicity. I would like to second, I think, the end of this portion, this extract portion, which suggests that I don't even necessarily think this is overt transphobia in any way. I think it is, although perhaps it is, as Paul Haas might say, willful ignorance. It is nonetheless less to do with an act of rejection and more to do with a lack of engagement and a lack of understanding. So in terms of considering if interventions for the future, I'd like to think that it would be primarily a process of consciousness raising and then tackling any more pernicious forms of active ignorance than thereafter. I'm going to leave this portion up here for you to see and maybe have a quick read of before we go into our question portion. With the aim that we might try and think of a way to avoid those processes of extracted speech and a way to maintain the positive aspects, that is, of improving non-binary visibility and maintaining an act of solidarity, whilst also not putting overt and continued epistemic and emotional labour onto non-binary agents. Thank you.